So this Eau Claire Music Festival, where some of us spent the weekend, is one of those smaller gatherings. Okay, there are 25,000 people here, but there are woods and fields to play in. There's a river running through it all. And this whole thing was organized by Justin Vernon, the founder of Bon Iver, and by his friends Aaron and Bryce Dessner from The National. Those are two of the best-known indie bands in the country, and so that's part of the draw. And plus, Bon Iver has not performed in public for years. But that thing Maura said about the gathering of the tribe, that is what this feels like.
My name is Michael Perry. We are so grateful you joined us here. If you hold yourself still and silent now, you can feel that river running behind you, running through the night, running through all time. It's good to have music near a river. There's this idea of baptism, of absolution, no matter what you believe. Better yet, it's good to have music near a place where two rivers come together, a confluence. For what are we but a confluence? And so here we are, cradled by a river in a sanctuary of sound, craving consecration, exaltation, on bended knee seeking benediction.
And this is the moment everyone's been waiting for, Justin Vernon and Bon Iver on stage.
Ever since I heard the howling wind.
That guy who introduced Bon Iver, that's Michael Perry. He's a writer and the festival narrator. He's a local boy. He grew up on a dairy farm, and he's known a lot of these musicians since they were kids. He watched them grow up and play in high school bands. He even babysat some of them. And now they're famous, but still deeply attached to this place, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Michael says that's the nature of small towns and rural areas. The connections here go deep.
It started with the Cook brothers. My mother was good friends with Phil and Brad Cook's mom. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on a farm, a dairy farm, but we also had sheep. And every spring, we'd have lambs, and people would come to look at the lambs. And my earliest memory of Phil and Brad Cook are two snot-nosed little kids peeking through the fence at our lambs. And now they're up on major stages all over. So I knew the Cook brothers. And then when I was, gosh, I think almost 30, one night I happened to come through a house where they were about to rehearse, and they had this kid sitting next to him on the couch with his cap pulled down, and he was just slouched there. And they said, "This is Justin, and he writes songs." And I remember that moment very clearly because I went, "Yeah, I'm sure he does. That's just terrific."
Another one.
Yeah. And so then the biggest thing and the reason I'm involved here is that somewhere along the line, Justin read Population 45, a book I wrote a while back. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, he resonated with that book, and he's brought it up in a number of interviews, and he just approached me, and he said he wanted to work based on that book. Mm-hmm. We also have a little history. I write a little music on my own, not worth discussing.
You've got your own band.
Right. And my very first album, Justin used to be in my band.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. And we always say he'll come crawling back. And we'll have a band meeting and take a vote.
There's this great story you were telling me about kind of the moment when folks in Eau Claire realized that Justin maybe had something beyond local talent.
Yes, so there was a place in Eau Claire, it's still there, a coffee shop named Racy's, and then they had a little restaurant called The Nucleus, and they had a small stage there. And one night Justin came to play, and he had released the songs for 4Emma. I don't mm-hmm. think he had a deal or anything. He had just released the songs on the internet. And Justin, that we all knew, came and set up his stuff, and he started playing. He was getting ready to play, and we noticed that people were starting to fill up the coffee shop, and then it just got fuller and fuller. And it was a snowy night, and pretty soon people couldn't get in, and they were lined up leaning against the windows to look in. And that was the night that we all realized something was happening, because people were driving 300 miles to come in here and play in this little coffee shop. So.
So what I love about that story, it's like the birth of a legend, right? That there is something almost mythic, something kind of amazing about this Chippewa Valley music scene.
Well, yes and no. It's that combination of, as I said, humility and gratitude that we can't believe any of this happened. On the other hand, I mean, everybody involved worked hard. It didn't just happen. But we're grateful to be from this place where you can be a dairy farm kid, or you can go to the bar down on Water Street and you can talk about poetry, or you can talk to somebody about hanging drywall. And I think if there's any sort of message, and I want to be careful with that word, I don't want to sound like we've been chosen or anything to educate the public, but it's that these things not only can happen here, they can happen anywhere. And I think that's probably what we're trying to convey, that you have a chance, man. No, don't let people tell you can't do it where you are.
Yeah, but there's also a kind of mythologizing of place, and that's maybe not the right word, but it's how you maybe fall in love with the place where you are and see it as deeply rooted.
Oh, yes. And then now there, that all tracks back to Justin's album For Emma Forever Ago.
How come?
We know the story of him. He was very ill and I'll just say sad. And he went out to his father's hunting cabin and he recorded that entire album all by himself over the course of a few months in a hunting shack out in the northern woods. Now, as the dad type figure, I'm allowed to say, just between you and me, there was a quick trip within 9 miles. So, but that mythology really grew up, and it was absolutely true. He really did go out into a shack for a while, but it's not like he was in the Northern Territories or anything. And so that was part and parcel of that album, which led to everything else. And so, sure, there's part of that. The other thing is, both Justin and I, we do really love this place.
You've got an interesting title, Festival Narrator.
Yes.
What exactly is a festival narrator?
That is the single most common question I received, and I haven't been able to answer it yet. It's a nebulous assignment. It began with some funky YouTube videos that were just me reading from Population 485, but they were about the steaminess of summer and the anticipation of the countryside getting green again. But they were released during the dead of winter. And they never released a single name that was going to be on the bill. They just said, we're going to have a festival. And then they put up, I forget the number, but it was a couple thousand tickets. And they sold out. People just trusted that they would give them something good. Yeah.
I was thinking about summer music festivals, and it seems to me that there's something really iconic about them. Or that's maybe not even the right word, but they're almost mythic in themselves. If you think back to, I mean, recent American history, Woodstock, or some of the other festivals that are part of our mythology, our lore by now.
You know, we have people. I was talking to a guy the other night who came all the way from London just for this. And I think people want to discover other places. They want, obviously, they come because they love certain acts, certain music. But also, it becomes part of your personal lore. I mean, when you remember that summer we saw the National and they did that one song and the lights shot off into the sky in the night and it was tremendous. And or we waited out the storm in our car and then we went and saw the Indigo Girls and everything was okay again. So I think there's definitely that. And you establish history with your friends. You have shared stories, shared experiences. And when you, let's face it, especially at night, when this place gets dark and they've illuminated the trails and they've illuminated the trees and then you have music playing, there's some worship going on. I don't, you know, it's up to each person to decide what kind of worship. But it is a beautiful, elevating experience. And in this day and age when we're bombarded with all the horrible things in the world, it is nice to be able to see how humans can be beautiful.
And there is,
and that from a flat-footed farm boy, man, from Chippewa, Wisconsin. But you do. You want to see that. You want to have hope.
Well, I was thinking, even as we walked in on the first day, you know, you get off the bus and the trail starts and you've got to walk down into a ravine. And then the ravine is going to open up into this beautiful big field and the river beyond. But it felt like a pilgrimage. And we were noticing that everybody was talking loudly when they got off the bus, and then they walk into the woods and everybody gets quiet.
Humans crave ceremony. You know, and what is a music festival but ceremony? Not just ceremony, but communal ceremony. we just, no matter what we believe, we do crave the idea that humans at their hearts want to get along, and we all want the same thing, and we all want a little beauty and gentleness, you know. And again, I keep saying I'm kind of just a knuckleheaded farm kid, but I want those things too. And yesterday was very, very busy. And I was running all over the place, as was everybody. And I've actually got one of the easier jobs here. Most of my work was done in advance. But at one point last night during the national show, I found my wife and we went out and sat in the grass. And then I just laid down on my back in the grass to try and get some rest. But I did look at her at one point and just say, man, we got a weird life. I don't know how this happened, but I'm sure grateful.
How are you guys doing? That was Michael Perry, our narrator. Give him a round of applause. I don't know how to put the words together, and he does. And I love him very much, and he's the biggest mentor, I think, besides my parents. One.
Eau Claire native Justin Vernon and his band Bon Iver. And I'm in the crowd there too, holding a microphone and kind of swaying in the night air. Michael Perry is the author of Population 485, and he has a new novel out called The Jesus Cow. We'll be back with more about summer music festivals after this. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.